I want to tell you a story about the neighborhood I grew up in. There was a dude that lived down the street from me named Nick Brockman. Nick, incredible dude. He was smart. He was funny. He loved music and video games, so we became friends immediately. Nick had this way about him. He was always kind of like the calm, thoughtful guy. And so one day when we're driving home in his little blue Toyota truck, he says to me, "Dale, I was lonely, so I prayed. I met this girl named Corey, and we're going on a date Friday night." And I say to myself, it's kind of weird, but cool, because every 17-year-old wants to go on a date with someone on Friday night. And so then, from that moment on, the date went well, and it was kind of like one of those friends in high school where there was, in the beginning, Nick, and then there was Nick and Corey. It was like this separation that never changed, right? So it was like AD to BC, right? Do you remember these friends? These like high school romances that actually lasted? And so from that moment on, it was always Nick and Corey. So it really came as absolutely no surprise that Nick asked me to be the best man in his wedding. We were only 19 years old. And so at his wedding, I want to tell you, the wedding day finally comes. And it's just wonderful, right? And Corey begins to walk down the aisle. And Nick, remember, stoic, thoughtful, starts to kind of like go up and down in his toes, right? And I'm the best man, and I took that role seriously. Like, I got to keep things under control, you know? And so he's bouncing in his feet, and then his knees are going up and down. And I'm like, man, what's going on, Nick? Pull it together, Nick, for Pete's sakes. This is your big day. And she starts coming down the aisle, and as she comes and gets closer and closer, Nick is like swaying like a tree, you know? And I'm like, oh man, this is bad. And then I have this moment, this honest moment inside myself where I say to myself, what if this doesn't work out between them? And I had this rhythm of fear just kind of came over me in that moment. Then all of a sudden, she gets halfway down the aisle. She literally leaves her dad, throws her bouquet out, and shouts, "I love you! I love you!" And I'm like freaking out, like the alarm's going off, like this is not supposed to happen this way. And Nick is just swaying there, and just like with this sturdy confidence, he says, "I love you too. I love you too." And that was only the beginning of the ceremony. And so this moment with Nick and Corey, I have this rhythm of fear going on in me. And it's this sense of like, what if something happens and they can't really fulfill? But they are captivated by this rhythm of love. There is nothing that's going to stop them from making this work with one another. They're committing through the highs and the lows, through the good times and the bad times, to be together. They knew something that I didn't know at that moment. They were living into this rhythm of love. They were saying to one another, hey, we know a whole lot is going to happen, and there's going to be a lot of differences between us, but we're going to love no matter what happens. And so in the Gospel of Matthew, this phenomenal words Jesus says, he says, "You have heard it said that you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." So Jesus kind of pulls in his disciples and those who are listening to him. And you think for a second, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. And if you are gut-wrenchingly honest with yourself, you're like, yeah, that sounds pretty good, actually. Because there's this rhythm of fear. Jesus isn't quoting anything in the Bible. He's not trying to say anything else, but he's talking to the heart. He's talking to that impulse or that inclination within your heart that says, yeah, I am going to draw my family, my friends around me, and I'm going to keep the doors locked to those outside of me. And that's the mentality of the rhythm of fear. Keep close those who you love. Keep locked tight those who you don't. The rhythm of fear is not so much the rhythm of internal fears, right? The inadequacies and insecurities. We've talked about that at the Courageous Heart. The rhythm of fear that I'm talking about now is those external. That radical distrust we have sometimes in other human beings. And within every one of our hearts, there is a rhythm of fear and there is a rhythm of love. And at certain times in your life, this rhythm of fear has gained in intensity. And at certain times in your life, you have lived fully into that rhythm of love. And Jesus, in this amazing teaching, confronts the rhythm of fear that we live with. Because isn't it sometimes easier to love people who are like me and forget about those who are different than me? And isn't it sometimes, wouldn't just sometimes surrounding ourselves with like-minded people be more convenient? But Jesus confronts this right away, names what's going on in our heart, and then the very next sentence, get ready. He says this, "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." And you throw your hands up like, oh my goodness. He just threw it down, this incredible challenge, this call to every one of us, this command to live into the rhythm of love. But if we're going to talk about this incredible rhythm of love, we have to get clear on what love is, because we've got some confusion in our culture. Because we can say in one sense, I love Doritos, and I love massages. And then we could say, and I love my wife, my husband, and my kids. I want to let you know right here now, Cool Ranch Doritos are delicious, and massages are like hot chocolate on a cold day, but they are not the same thing as loving people. Are you with me? Yes. I love Doritos. I love my kids. No. It doesn't work that way. So what are we saying when we say to love someone else? And so we've got these things we need to sort of divide up, right? Love is not living from one romantic mountaintop to another. Love is not 50 Shades. I'm sorry. I'm going to name it right here. But from one romantic mountaintop, that's not a realistic picture of what love is. And love is not cold and callous responsibility to another. That doesn't work either. And love is not a superhero or heroine who serves your every need. Sorry, guys, not going to happen. And so if love is not these things, these are these images in our culture, right? Then I think love is the holistic combination of romance, responsibility, and service to each other. So love takes a part of each one of these and holds it together, right? Love is more, though. Love sings when people are sensitive with one another, when there's an openness, where there's a sense of wonder in another person, and when there's delight. I love this word to think about love as delight. This way of like thinking that every human being you've ever met, there's something incredibly delightful. There's something joyful and surprising about every human being. And when you love someone, you are saying, I am going to search for that delight. I'm going to find that joy and that surprising wonder within everyone. And this leads us to something really, really important. Love is never, ever domination or control of someone else. This is awful. And we want to say absolutely no to this type of love. So I came up with this week. Love then is delighting in someone else and expressing it through your time, your service, your gifts, your touch, and your words. And so love is this delight in someone. And it causes you to give of yourself, to give your time, to give your service, your gifts, your touch, and your words. So, okay. So we know what love is. But the question is, why? Why is this command for us to love those who are different than ourselves? Jesus goes on, and after he says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. Then he says this, for he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And so this fascinating picture emerges of when we love, we are called sons and daughters. So the original revolution of love starts with God. God is the origin of this great love to human beings. So we live into the rhythm of love because this God is all about love. And this is strong boundary love. This isn't like silly love as we talked about. This is not I love Doritos, right? And so then what's fascinating is that this image is used of Father in heaven. Now, there are some points in the Bible where it uses these great mothering images of God as creator, and they're so beautiful and they're so rich and they're everywhere. And then there are other images in the Bible of fatherly images, and a lot of us carry a lot of baggage with both of those. But what this metaphor carries for us is that God is like a good parent. And if you had a bad parent, God is not like that. God is one who supplies your every need, who is with you, who is there for you through the rough times in life. So when we love, when we live into this rhythm, we are being good sons and daughters of this great parental God. And then what I love about the verse is he makes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the righteous and unrighteous. What's fascinating about the rhythm of fear is that it sets up for us this us versus them mentality, right? This is our group, that is your group. What's fascinating about this verse is it's like that mentality can't happen because rain falls on everyone. Because sun shines on everyone. We are all a part of this human project. We are all interwoven and connected together. So every time we love, we are loving the whole. So in this fascinating verse, we love because it breaks down the us versus them. The way I would say this is the rhythm of fear creates the categories of us versus them. But the rhythm of love breaks down this worn out way of thinking. The passage goes on and it gives us these four questions right away. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? Tax collectors at that day were in collaboration with Rome. And so tax collectors would take more and more of your money, which means less and less bread for your family. And so these are the bad guys, you know. And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what more are you than others? And do not even Gentiles do the same? So question after question. Hey, and basically it's saying, a lot of people choose to live in the rhythm of fear. But this God asks us to lean into the rhythm of love. Comes to the very last verse, and we're still sort of on the edge of our seats wondering, why are we called to love others who are different? Because love is risky and dangerous, and it's not always fun. It's not like Doritos. That's why we love Doritos. It's easier. And so then it says this verse, be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. To which like major alarms go off in your head of like, that is unrealistic. But this word, this Greek word teleos, it actually doesn't mean perfect. That's not a great translation. It means to be fully mature. It means to have an integrity to the rock solid core of your heart. It means rock solid character. So have integrity as your heavenly Father has integrity is the sense here. And so the sense is like this. Every time you love someone who's different than you, you draw near to the heart of God. Every time you love someone who's different, you begin to hear the heartbeat of God for the world. Whoa. I've got this great friend and we call him Science Mike because he's passionate about neuroscience. And neuroscience is amazing for nerds of science. And I was asking him this week, what does it mean? What's going on in your brain when you love your enemies? And he gave me this explanation, which I'm going to way oversimplify it here. So our brains are made up of these different parts that sort of have a different function, right? So our prefrontal lobe, that is the most advanced part of our brain. That's the part that does rational thinking, the part that makes us set goals and think ahead. And then there is our limbic system right over here. The limbic system is sort of the most unadvanced part of our brain. It's the part of our brain where that triggers our fears and our anger and that gets us to react of either flight or fight, right? They call this the crocodile brain, okay? So you can think of they're in opposition to each other. The prefrontal lobe, having you process and rationally think, the limbic system, crocodile brain. You know, it's snap that hand, right? And then you have the anterior cingulate cortex. This is the part of the brain that actually processes compassion and love. And then you have the cerebrum or neocortex. This processes all the visuals that we see every day. And then the thalamus. This brain is sort of like the download of who we are and what our world is like. So for example, when you say to yourself, God is love, or when you pray, your brain tells your body what it is. It sort of downloads it, it inscribes it upon your very heart. So here is the fascinating part. Now we understand how the brain works, very simplified. So when the prefrontal lobe is like doing its thing, helping you think and think about the future, the limbic system is shut down. It's like two different operating systems in your brain. When the limbic system is like angry and lashing out, the prefrontal rational part is shut down. Amazing, right? Mind, light bulb over the head. So what this all means is every time you love your enemy. You are activating that anterior cingulate cortex. It's filling with compassion and love, and it's activating the prefrontal lobe, and it's shutting down the limbic system. So every time you love your enemy, you love someone who's different than you, you are neurologically rewiring your brain. Woo, isn't that amazing? I mean, light bulb. And so the rhythm of fear is being shut down in your body every time you love someone who's different than you. And the rhythm of love is being put into your soul, into your heart. Incredible. So in 1947, there was a crazy incident in Calcutta, India. Now, they're going through civil war at this period, and there's a Muslim majority and then a Hindu minority. And so what's going on is there was a 48-hour street fight where over 4,000 people are killed. We're talking like bloody gang wars, switchblades. And so Mahatma Gandhi, the political and really religious leader, comes to Calcutta, and he moves in with a Muslim friend. Gandhi himself is a Hindu. And so he basically announces to all of India, hey, I'm going to have a fast until you stop the fighting. Which in America, you're like, but in India, they take this stuff seriously. So if you want to like go fast and change the world, India is the place to go. And so he decides to fast, and he's 78 at this time. And so all the college students are talking about what Gandhi is doing to stop this violence between Muslims and Hindus. And there's a Muslim gang, they're called Agundas. And an Agunda walks into where Gandhi is, throws a piece of bread at him and says, eat. And he's obviously distraught, this Agunda. He's been trained to fight for his whole life. And the Agunda throws the bread and he's distressed, and Gandhi simply composes himself and says, brother, what's wrong? Now the Agunda says, The Muslims killed my son. So I took one of their sons and I threw him against the wall. And I don't know, but I don't know what God thinks, but I am going to hell. So Gandhi calmly lets this moment happen and says to him, brother, I know a way out of hell. And he says to him, go. Go and find a Muslim orphan boy. Go and raise that boy. Treat him as your own son, but here's the deal. Raise him as a Muslim, not a Hindu. So Gandhi understood Jesus' teaching, love your enemies and pray for those who are persecuting you. Because every time you choose to love someone who's different than you, not only are you transformed, but you show the world a little glimpse of God on this earth. Every time that annoying coworker or someone in your life that's close to you annoys you and you choose to do a small act of love, you are transforming yourself, and glimpsing God's heart for the world is taking place. So as we conclude today, I wonder if there's anyone in your life that you need to lean into the rhythm of love with. I wonder if you have a spouse or a son or a daughter or a friend or a neighbor, a family member, or a coworker that needs your love. And I'm going to ask for you just to take a minute of silence and to think about how you can lean into the rhythm of love this week.